received amazing, abundant grace, and we are going to sing about that right now. So stand on up and let's sing a little bit together.
Water, the source of life, the universal solvent. When water is present, life flourishes. Animals gather, foliage thrives, humans build, and life is full. But when it's scarce, we're reminded of our dependence on water by our thirst. A thirst that drives us to countless counterfeits. But what if that thirst could be quenched at a moment's notice? God offers His Spirit, His living water, to not only sustain us, but to cause us to thrive. Jesus told a thirsty soul that whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life. His offer still stands for us today.
You are mine.
call us yours, that we get to know you and call you ours, that you keep us, you watch over us, you call us into deep and uncomfortable places, and you're with us all along the way. You're so faithful. Thank you, God. Amen. Awesome. Why don't you give somebody a handshake and tell them howdy, and you can have a seat.
Well, welcome. My name is Brian Tone, the senior pastor here at Crossroads. Let's just thank the band for serving us really well today. Really good. Thank you, guys. So a few things I want to bring you up to speed on. One is, how many alumni for Go Cincinnati do we happen to have in here today? Any alumni? Yeah. It sounds really over the top to say, but as far as we know, it is the largest work project in the history of the world. And every year it gets larger and larger. We've never found anybody who's done more than however many several thousand people that show up to serve for 4 or 5 hours straight in the same locale. It's a great thing every year. We're not taking signs for that right now, but we are looking for people who want to lead projects, to spread mulch, to paint things, all that stuff. So there's an informational meeting later on today. Get in touch with us. We would just love to have you and your organizational skills to be involved in that. That would be huge. You know, can you believe we are 1/12 of the way through 2016 already? I mean, crazy. Like, bam, it's going away from us. That means, guess what happens next Wednesday? The beginning of Lent. Yeah, crazy. Ash Wednesday is next Wednesday. That is the beginning of Lent. I mean, a lot of us, most of us, only know Lent as something when you give up chocolate or give up beer or give something you don't that you like that you now can't have anymore. And if I would ask you, okay, why do you do that? You would say, because I should. Or, well, why is that? There is something about laying things aside in that period of time that heads up to Easter, which is what Lent is. And we've been doing an immersive experience around here for the last several years on Ash Wednesday. We're going to be doing that this Wednesday at all of our sites, different times throughout the whole day. I encourage you to do it. What does that mean? Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. You've probably heard that any funeral that you've been to. It comes from some Bible passages, and it's the idea of things die. Ash Wednesday is about recognizing that all of us have in us things that should die. Not things that we should momentarily punish ourselves for, like not having beer, or maybe that should die permanently in you. You shouldn't have alcohol anymore. Maybe it should be judgmentalism. I don't know what it is, but that's what we're looking at Ash Wednesday and what our experience is around. Next week is a great, great thing that happens every year. Super Bowl preaching, it's coming up. We've added some additional service times to make sure there's room for everybody at all of our sites, and we have plenty of tickets left, plenty because of that. So please, please, please get those free tickets to ensure that you can have a seat and your friends. We do this because our society is just so divided. It's so divided, and Super Bowl is the one national holiday that everyone rallies around and celebrates. So we want to do that and inject some spiritual levity and intensity into that, and we're doing that again this year. We're really excited about it, and we need volunteers. It's a great way, if you've been coming to Crossroads as a fresh person, to know some new folks. It's going to be fun. You're going to be a part of something that's making a difference, and you'll get to know some new people and get connected to this place called Crossroads. So if you want to serve as just a one-time easy thing, we need you. It'd be great, great to have you. All right, we're going to have the opportunity to be generous. We're going to take up an offering. And if you're brand new, no worries. Just let this pass by. This is for those of us who like the things we just talked about. We want to fund those things. Go Cincinnati, I mentioned. That's going to be hundreds of thousands of dollars in mulch and rental equipment and logistical supplies, all that stuff. This fuels our Whiz Kids program, building into kids here in our city who are at risk and undereducated. It fuels stuff we do around the globe, everything that helps you and I grow while we're inside of an auditorium. But it's not just that. The main reason we do it is we want to be more like Jesus. We want to be more like God, and God is generous. So the more I become like him, the more I'm willing to be like him in all areas of my life, including how I give. So some of us are going to give when we have this bag passes by. Some of us are going to go to crossroads.net/gift and do a one-time gift or automatic recurring giving. But this is who we are. It's what we do. We are generous givers right here at Crossroads. And while we do that, we're going to take a look at one of last year's Super Bowl commercials that was one of our favorites. We do this every year. We have Super Bowl commercials and a halftime show. And this was one of our favorite commercials from last year.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, $79.
Look at that.
Okay, Bob. All right.
Did you see my PBT for Thursday?
Oh, my gosh. That is so fresh. You are totes adored.
So strong.
Definitely.
Hey, you rascals, what are you talking about out here? Did Justin Timberlake release a new MP3 tape? Okie dokie.
Your dad is so weird.
Tired of missing out on what your kids are saying? Having difficulty understanding words like turnt, bay, ratchet, YOLO, and twerk? Introducing Trendslator, the world's first and finest pop culture and trending translator. Simply place on the state-of-the-art soundproofing headphones, pick up the device, and discreetly place the trend-sensing microphone in the center of any preteen, tween, or teen conversation.
Devin just asked me if I wanted to turn up with him at the Nicki Minaj concert on
Friday evening.
Are you freaking kidding me?
Yucky. He is not a pleasant person to look at.
He is so thirsty.
He is so cute.
To get your very own Trendslator today, call toll-free 1-800-COOL-DAD. Order today.
Thanks, Trendslator.
Is your dad listening?
Oh, so good, so good. So we got a lot of good stuff coming up. One more thing I want to let you know. Next week, obviously, our Super Bowl service. And then the week after that is another really cool week for Crossroads because we are starting our sixth site. As you know, we meet in Oakley, Mason, Florence, Westside, Uptown. I think that's all of them or so. And we are going to be starting Crossroads Oxford up by Miami University. Not this weekend, but next weekend. Really excited about that. Crossroads Oxford. Some people started calling it Croxford, but that's too close to Crotchford. So we're just going to call it Crossroads Oxford. And if you want to get engaged in that, there's some information there. We're trying some new things with multi-site. And this is some new stuff we're trying, which helps us get it up quicker. And we're really excited about it. And it's also a result of our generosity that many of us have done, all of us who are in a Crossroads through the I'm In campaign. So well done. We're going to actually talk about that in several weeks where we are. So good, good stuff. One of the guys who's involved in that is also involved in starting all of our justice ministry. Actually, he was involved in starting Crossroads. His name is Brian Wells. He was one of the original 11 people who had the desire to start a church that would reach people who had given up on church but hadn't given up on God. And he was in the search team of three people that was running a search process to find people and bring them into Crossroads or actually find and interview candidates. And I remember he came to Pittsburgh to interview and / recruit me, him and another guy. And he's been a huge, huge founding part of our church. He's been a founding board member of our church. He is a great friend, and he's my next door neighbor. And he's going to talk about what it looks like to go from risk, embrace risk, in doing the impossible. So please welcome someone who's impacted your life, Brian Wells. Come on up here, Brian. Where is he? Yes. Come on. Come on.
Yes, and you know, Brian's 20-year probationary period is almost up. So in the interest of figuring out if he's a keeper or not, we're welcoming feedback. So, you know, please let us know. You know, I would throw out one thing to you, kind of my own little thing on the Oxford thing. Really cool stuff that's going on up there. Not only is a certain young man by the name of John Wells part of the team up there, but I've gotten to know the leadership team up there a little bit. They got some really cool stuff planned for Oxford. So I would say if you know somebody, families that live up there, or if you know a student that's going to Miami, encourage them to check it out the weekend after the Super Bowl. It's going to be really cool. Well, I need to warn everybody this morning just kind of where we're going with this. That I don't want you to be surprised here that by the end of this, what I want you to understand today as we close out this series of Anything is Possible is I really want you to understand that in order to get from the possible to the impossible, we need to embrace risk and uncertainty. In order to get from a life of the possible to the impossible, we need to embrace risk and uncertainty. Let me say a prayer. God, we ask that we would be people that listen for your voice and then follow it. And that in that we could step into this life that you've created for us that would take us to places that we think are impossible. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, Friday, June 16th, 2006, was a little weird for me. Now, at that point in my life, my biggest challenge was usually wrapping up work in time so I could get home to have dinner with Nancy and the kids. And you might say that my challenge that day was very similar in that I was also trying to get home. There's a little bit of a twist to it that day. See, because that day I found myself in a small cinder block room on an island in South Asia, staring down three angry young soldiers with AK-47s and bad attitudes. Now, if that scene isn't kind of strange enough for you, the stranger thing is me, if you knew me, I am not the guy you would put in that room. I am not, you know, kind of this risk taker. As a matter of fact, in my life, if I can eliminate all risk, I do. And certainly, I try to kind of minimize it wherever I can. So I'm not, I have no interest in bungee jumping, you know. I never want to swim with the sharks. I don't tear the do not remove tags off my mattresses, you know. Just, you know, kind of not me. Which is an interesting juxtaposition versus my next door neighbor, Brian Tome. So, you know, I have seen him ride his motorcycle without a helmet. He claims to have seen me locking the front door when I cut my grass. Now, I don't actually remember ever actually having done that, but let's just say for the purpose of his cute story that maybe at some point in the past, for some very valid logical reason, I locked the front door, you know, when I cut my front grass. I can only tell you I'm fairly confident that while I was cutting the grass, I saw him ride by on his motorcycle, no helmet, cigar in one hand, and texting with the other. And I don't even know if he was texting. I think he might have been playing high-stakes online poker. I also realize with that picture he has no hands left for the handlebars, but that's how I remember it. I wonder sometimes, though, if that's why more of my prayers aren't answered. There's all these spiritual resources in eastern Cincinnati all being diverted to protecting his reckless butt, and there's nothing kind of left for the rest of us. So you get kind of a little bit of picture of me. It also played out when I dated. So when I dated, I would never ask anybody out unless I had a high degree of confidence that they were going to say yes. A high degree of confidence. So if I met somebody that was kind of interested, I would begin, you know, kind of this process of a couple months of some significant research. I would complete the necessary background checks, all the mutual friend reconnaissance, you know, all that kind of necessary stuff. And then if at the end of all that, I came to what I felt was a higher than 85% degree of probability that they would say yes, I would ask them out. That's right, ladies. That's just how BW rolled in the 90s. Crazy times. Crazy times. But then I met Nancy. And I met Nancy, and I met her at a couple different events, and I was like, wow, this lady's really special. I would like to get to know her more. So at the time, we were part of this group of about a dozen friends that would do all these things together. So I started going on these group dates where we would go to, you know, Kings Island, or we would go to a play, or maybe we would even, you know, kind of do like maybe go play doubles tennis. And that was all going well. Did that for a couple months, and I was like, you know what? I want to get to know her even more now, though. I want to take this to the next level, you know. So we're just going to go out on a date, just the two of us. So I asked her out. We went on a date. We continued that for a couple months, and that was all going really well. And then one night over dinner, in casual conversation, I discovered two fascinating facts. One was, Nancy told me she had never said anything to her friend Jan about me, you know, whatsoever. When the whole reason that I was with her was that going into it, my best friend Jim had told me that Nancy's best friend Jan had mentioned that we would make a great couple. Come on. I mean, come on, we can go back to third grade on that protocol. We know how that works. This chick digs me. You know, this chick digs me. So I was really excited. I was like, wow, this is great. I hadn't even begun all the necessary background check, the reconnaissance, any of that kind of stuff. I was like, I could learn to live with this accelerated dating phase one protocol. You know, this could really work. This is much more efficient. As a matter of fact, I think I'm going to put that in my relationship book I'm writing. Special moments made more efficient. You know, I could kind of get to learn this. So we'd been doing these group dates. And then when I asked her out a couple months later, we got to know each other even more, and then in conversation came up, she had never even mentioned anything to Jan that she had any interest in me whatsoever. And on those group dates, she had no idea she was with me. Two months. So that's how I started dating my wife 2 months before she started dating me. So you get a little bit of a picture. So that guy, how does that guy end up in that little cinder block room? Well, it's a little bit of a complicated journey. And it starts right here. You see, when we started Crossroads in 96, we were asking the question, what kind of environments does God seem to use to help people to really grow and change? And we want to create that as much as we can. And so part of that process, one of the things that I did was I asked all our core group that had started the church and was leading, I asked them to give me the names of the people who had most impacted their lives. And mostly it was people that, it was this musician, it was this author, it was this professor, you know, et cetera. And as best I could over the next year, whether it was on the phone or traveling around the country, I interviewed all these people. And one of the questions I would ask them is, as you look back on your life now, is there any time or moment that you point to and say, that was particularly important to my growth? As a matter of fact, it still affects me today. Every single one of them had an immediate answer and started telling me a story. And one of the interesting things was there's a wide variety of people, there's a wide variety of stories. Some of them would talk about this cross-cultural serving experience they had gone on. Some of them had talked about this time of crisis or chaos in their life. Some of them talked about this time when they were first challenged to lead other people. But by the time I finished all these interviews, about 25 or so, I ended up seeing there was one common thread that ran through every single one of these stories. Every single one of these stories that these people told me was a time when they were at a completely vulnerable, risky point in their life. Every one of them was a situation where they stepped into significant vulnerability, risk, and uncertainty. And the thing is, they weren't like this classic profile of these kind of leaders that, you know, that are very kind of embrace risk in all these ways. These were people who reluctantly went into these things. A lot of them went into these situations actually against their will, or they were at least very reluctant participants in the process, but found out once they were in that, now as they looked back on it, it spurred them to a place in their journey they never thought was possible. It shouldn't, you know, if you're a fan of movies, shouldn't, you know, kind of sound, you know, kind of unusual to you. I mean, we're all very familiar now with this kind of archetype of the hero who's very reluctant at first before he goes on the journey. So the main character is just fine with life as it is, but something happens to disrupt their current state, and it spurs them on this journey of what's become known as the hero's journey. So, you know, Shrek, he just wants to be left alone in a swamp, but he has to leave in order to rescue Fiona. Frodo doesn't want the ring, he doesn't want the power, anything like that, but he's forced on this journey. Katniss wants nothing to do with the reaping, but when her little sister is chosen, she has to go on this quest. And it goes on and on. You know, whether it's Neo, or it's Han Solo, or it's Peter Parker, this prototype of the reluctant hero has become a staple. That's what I started seeing with these people who had achieved enormous things and influenced people all over the world were very reluctant participants on this journey through risk. But what happened on the back end had forever implications. And one of the learnings that they seemed to come through it was that passing through that time of risk or uncertainty, they started to embrace where Paul is talking about kind of the life of somebody who's going after Jesus in 2 Timothy, where he says, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear and timidity, but of power and love and self-discipline." Now, I didn't like that one. See, I like it here. This is comfortable. This is secure. This is predictable. This is safe. And I've always thought about risk. Risk is this necessary evil thing out there that every once in a while, if there's no other way I can get that thing out there, I've got to very reluctantly go through this necessary evil thing called risk to get what I need. And then I get it, and then I can get back to life. And what I was hearing here from this theme of this people is that risk was not a necessary evil. Risk was a gift that God has given us to get from places of possibility to places of impossibility. Risk is a tool that God has given us to move through fear and doubt and uncertainty from a life of fear and reluctance to a life of power and love and self-discipline. So these last 20 years has kind of been a journey for me of increasingly trying to hear God's voice to guide me through times of fear and doubt and risk so I can increasingly taste a life of power and love and self-discipline. So I want to share that with you today in three acts. But before I do that, I want to kind of give this kind of caveat here. When we talk about taking spiritual risks, we're not talking about doing dumb, reckless things without having thought out, and then when it doesn't work out, covering it with spiritual language. You know, I call that the camp of, if we can't be holy, shouldn't we at least be stupid? You know, that's not what I'm talking about here. What I'm talking about is some very real tools God has given us to pass through fear, doubt, and risk. Okay, Act 1, 1996. And we start Crossroads, and I am working in brand management at P&G, and I'm starting to feel that maybe I'm supposed to leave that to help, you know, kind of lead this place and really get it moving. And that's crisis for me. That is crisis for me. I had finally gotten to a place in my life where what had basically happened in my adult life up to then was I had experienced an increasing amounts of reward and comfort in exchange for showing an increasing amount of control in my life. And to give up that kind of control wasn't comfortable with it. Nancy and I bought a house, and we were expecting our first child. So somewhere on my equation was not, now become a parent, have your first child, oh, and by the way, take a 70% pay cut. No, spreadsheets weren't adding up on that one. So I was in a little bit of a crisis because I was still feeling, maybe I'm supposed to do this. So it drove me kind of looking for answers. Like, well, maybe there's answers in the Bible. Okay, interesting fact. Nowhere in the Bible does it tell you be a brand manager or be a pastor. You know, not in there. There was, however, some direction in there. Though, for instance, when Paul is writing in Colossians, and he says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for human masters. Okay, by that point, I got to tell you that none of my ideas, none of my passion was going toward my work. It was all going toward this new thing that I was starting on the side. And I started to feel like, okay, if my work is not something I can bring all my heart to, I need to start asking some hard questions. Problem with that scripture was that was more of a challenge for me than a comfort. I mean, that kind of ramped up my anxiety even more. Okay, but how do I do this? That doesn't help me with the spreadsheets at all. So I kept kind of searching in the Bible. And to be honest with you, at this point, I was more searching for an out than anything. Where's that scripture I can look at that's going to really kind of let me off the hook on this one? And then I discovered Paul again writing, and this time it's in Philippians. Philippians 4, 6 to 7, he says, "Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. It's like, anxious about anything? Yes, I think so. A peace that transcends all understanding? I will have some of that, please. Yes, please, I'll take some. So, maybe this journey isn't just about the Bible. Maybe it's what that's telling me is it's also about prayer. It's about both the Bible and prayer. So I kind of added that to my mix. So now I'm in a season of prayer and Bible and spreadsheets. Spreadsheets aren't looking any better, by the way. I'm starting to feel like I'm getting a little bit more clarity, but still, it does not feel at all like the picture of that I have enough confidence to make a change. I'm just reading through the Bible, a couple months more go by, and I come across this passage in Proverbs. Plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors they succeed. Okay, put this on the list of another scripture I don't like, okay? This is up there with the thing of not living in fear and timidity, but power and love and self-defense. I don't like this one either. And I mostly don't like those because I'm not a kind of guy who likes to kind of open up and share, you know, what's going on in my life with, people. I don't like to share it with people. I'm a pretty significant introvert, you know. And extroverts here, they're like, oh, you don't like people. No, I like people. I love people. I just want everyone to like me and then leave me alone. But I was wrestling with it. I was in crisis. I was like, well, okay, maybe it's not just prayer and Bible. Maybe it's also my community around me I need to lean into. So I took a look around in my life and I said, who are the people who know me really well, I feel like have my best interest at heart, and have a track record of making good decisions? And I kind of got, there were about five people in my life that I kind of narrowed in on, and I got together with them each one-on-one. And I said, here's what I'm wrestling with, here's what I'm going through. Over these next couple months, I want you to be praying for me about this, and then I'm going to get together with you every once in a while, and I empower you to ask me any question you want, no matter how much you think it'll tick me off. And so, you know, kind of went on this journey, and over time, I found out that I had stumbled onto this kind of equation for fear and doubt and risk. Prayer, Bible, and community. And through that process, I didn't get complete clarity. As a matter of fact, one of my five people told me definitely not to do it. I didn't get complete clarity, but I had enough clarity. I had just enough of a break in my fear. Just enough of a break to kind of stick my finger in it and start to pull. And you know, I don't know what you're carrying into 2016, what fear or uncertainty, that you don't need to see the whole thing, but maybe you will see just enough a break, just a little break this year to be able to put your finger in and start to pull. So I did that. I did that, and I pulled. I pulled. And then I stepped through. And in October of 96, I resigned from P&G, and I came on staff here. And I found that that moment, in retrospect, was a time, for the first time I think in my life, I was stepping from the possible to the impossible. Spreadsheets didn't add up. And you know, a lot of people look at Crossroads now, and they see kind of things that we're doing and all that. Well, yeah, you know, they're so big, of course, and they, you know, say it's all about, you know, kind of we're big. We were 11 people. 11 people. Who just, and not perfect people, not totally brave people by any means, but 11 people who said, what would it look like? What would it look like if we were not driven by a spirit of fear and timidity, but we were driven by a spirit of power and love and self-discipline? What would that kind of place look like? And I've been able to live this thing of 20 years now of being around this community in different ways, of seeing increasingly possible in my rearview mirror and impossible right where we're sitting. And the number of lives that we have seen change, the number of families, the number of marriages we've seen restored, the number of healings, the number of poor that have been fed, the number of little girls who have been pulled out of brothels and given a new life because of this kind of zone that we all have crossed into. Act 2. So Crossroads is kind of picking up some steam, starting to roll, and we're increasingly asking questions of, okay, how can we create this place that is both a safe place for our friends to wrestle with their spiritual questions and a dangerous place where we take seriously God's commands in the Bible even when we don't like them? How do we create a place that's both safe that way and also dangerous? How do we create a place that's dangerous that says, when God says in the book of Isaiah 1:17, when he tells us to learn to do right, to seek justice, to defend the oppressed, to take up the cause of the fatherless, to plead the case of the widow, what do we do with about that? What would a community that was not living in a spirit of fear and uncertainty, what would a community that was living in a spirit of power and love and self-confidence, what would they do for the powerless? What would they do for the widow? What would they do for the fatherless? And so it took us on this kind of expanded journey where we started kind of trying to follow God's call and doing things like, what are we going to do for the working poor in Cincinnati? What are we going to do in New Orleans? What are we going to do in South Africa? What are we going to do in Asia? And as part of one of those projects, there's a project that I was leading in Asia at the time, that's when things really started to get crazy. We were working this project in Asia where I started to discover some very significant civil rights abuses that were going on. In the small little country that we were working in, Christians were being kidnapped and tortured and killed. Scores and scores of very young children were being conscripted into military service. And if that wasn't enough of a taste of raw evil, forced child prostitution had become so significant, it had become known as the pedophile's paradise. And we looked at that and we said, boy, what do we do with that one? Well, what would a group of people that were living in a spirit of power and love and self-confidence, what would they do? Would they pray about it? Absolutely. Would they do something else about it too? I think so. So we started a year-long undercover investigation there. And sure enough, it was as dark as you could possibly imagine, even worse than we thought. And we're coming to a point in the investigation toward the end of it, where I needed to go over there and I needed to meet with our folks on the ground again, and we needed to kind of lay out kind of the next steps. And so it was about 2 weeks before I was going to leave on that trip, and things started to turn south. There was a civil war that had kind of been at a ceasefire for a long time between the terrorist organization and the government, and it totally broke down. Grenades were being thrown in churches, people were being kidnapped, civilians were being blown up, suicide bombers were popping up all over the place. And I started to question, you know, I'm not sure now's the right time for me to go over there. You know, as a matter of fact, God, I don't even know if I'm supposed to go over. You know what? I think I would rather be cutting my front grass with the front door locked, if you don't mind. I don't know quite how to figure this out. How do I do this again, God? Oh, yeah. Prayer, Bible, and community. Okay, so, you know, 2 Timothy 1:7, God has not given us a spirit of fear and timidity, but of power and love and self-discipline. That's great, God. That's really great. But what does that mean this time? It was now about a week before I needed to decide, was I going or not? And every day the body count was adding up. I had a little map in my office where I would get a text every day, and I would be able to plot on the map where the latest killings were. And I was trying to figure out kind of what is the route, you know, our truck can take, you know, kind of to get around that. No spirit of fear, timidity, power, love, and self. That's great, God, that's great. But what does that mean now? What does that mean in this case? I mean, does that mean that I'm supposed to go over there and serve those kids and possibly not come back and leave my own 10-year-old son and 7-year-old daughter without a father? That doesn't make much sense. As a matter of fact, God, I thought I already had that merit badge. I mean, remember, October 96, I walked away from the job, walked away from all the money and security. I think I've already kind of been on that journey of learning to trust you. I'm ready for something different. Anne Lamott says that the two most powerful prayers are, help me, help me, help me, and thank you, thank you, thank you. This was a help me, help me, help me time for me. prayer, Bible, and community. As part of that, one of my friends that I had praying about it for, I got together with him, and his basic advice was, he said, hey, first of all, you need to just do, if you feel a strong direction from God, you need to do that. If you're feeling you should stay here, you should stay here. If you're feeling you should go, you know, you should go. I'm just telling you from my prayer, I'm feeling a high degree of peace and confidence that you should go. It's like, good for you. That warms my heart that you've come to that. And maybe I would be more inspired right now if I hadn't seen you ride a motorcycle with a cigar in one hand, texting with the other. 2 days before I'm supposed to leave, or not, trying to spend a lot of time with my kids. You know, my biggest fear was not so much happening to me. My biggest fear was my 10-year-old boy, my 7-year-old daughter, growing up without a dad. I just couldn't see how that would be the plan. So 2 days before, I go out to my son's school where they're having a chapel service, and I sit in on a chapel service, and at the end of the chapel service, one of his friends, a 10-year-old boy, gets up and steps to the microphone and starts singing a song. And I'm not sure that I had ever heard this song before, but the words go something like, I have a maker, he formed my heart. Before even time began, my life was in his hands. He knows my name. He knows my thoughts. He sees each tear that falls and hears me when I call. And oh, did I mention John's 10-year-old little friend that was singing that had lost his dad a couple years before? I remember being in the car on the way home. I was just like, God, I am conflicted. I mean, I totally celebrate the peace and the comfort you've brought that boy, the community, the love, the family you've brought around him. That's awesome. And that still doesn't bring his dad back. How does that add up? How does that add up to goodness? One day before, I'm needing to either leave or go. Nancy and I come, and it's a midweek service. And we're sitting up there in the balcony, right about kind of right up there. And Stephen Manuel is leading worship. And at the end of worship, he says, you know what, let's do one more song. You know what, well, I'm going to teach you a new song tonight. And he starts playing. I have a maker. He knows my heart. Before even time began, my life was in his hands. He knows my name. Stupid Stephen. And I'm up there, and I start crying. And they're not sad tears. They are angry, ticked off tears. So I'm having this conversation with God. No, 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 no. That's not our story. You know, I'm not going to go over there and not come back, and then John can experience comfort and peace and healing and stand up and sing that song, and grace can be with him, you know, and all that, and then people are all going to feel all loving and it's wonderful afterwards, and they're still going to go home to know Dad. That is not our story. And then Stephen says, let's do that song again. And I felt as clear, as strong of a voice in my head that I've ever heard. And I felt God say, are you listening to the words? I have a father. He calls me his own. He will never leave me. No matter where I go. And so it was another 24 hours of serious prayer, Bible, and community, and I felt like I had enough clarity. I was supposed to step through that fear and go. And you know, when I got over there, it didn't get any better. As a matter of fact, it got even worse while I was over there. The terrorists blew up a bus and killed 64 civilians not far from us. And that's when I ended up in that little cinder block room with those three angry young soldiers with the AK-47s. See, at the time, what was going on over there, there were no good guys in the equation. The government soldiers were responsible for just as many of abuses as the terrorists were. So I found myself in the hands of those three young soldiers, and they were asking me increasingly difficult questions that they didn't like my answers to. I remember thinking, wow, you know, if I don't come back, I hope Nancy locks the front door when she cuts the grass, you know, for one. I think that's one lesson out of this for all of us. No, they were asking me questions. They were accusing me of being part of the wrong side. And I don't even remember the answers that I was giving them. I know I was saying things out of my mouth. The only thing going through my head was, help me, help me, help me. And I found I wasn't alone. And after about kind of 10 minutes of those questions, they finally just handed me my passport, handed me my phone back, and pushed me out the door. Now, I like the way that story ends, but I have to admit the definition of risk is sometimes it doesn't end the way we want. But I got to tell you, prayer, Bible, and community can take us to the place through fear and risk and uncertainty where there's a question that becomes even more important than the question of will it work. The question is, should I try? And I don't know where, you know, where everything, you know, would have gone had that gone different way and all that. I only know that that was the beginning of our justice journey here at Crossroads. And I only know that we have since then been able to go to some pretty impossible places. I know that there are stories people told us were going to be virtually impossible. And I know over 100 of them. I know over 100 of those little girls in Mumbai and Calcutta and elsewhere where the doors of their brothels have actually been kicked down. They've been pulled out. They've received medical care, they've received counseling, they've received job training, they've received life skill development, and they've received joy, and they're dancing now, and they hadn't danced for a long time because of people in this community. Because people in this community said, what would it look like if we lived in a spirit of power and love and self-confidence and self-discipline? Act 3. So the justice work is expanding, and it's going well, and we're seeing some real fruit there. And I'm starting to see, not only in our work around the world, but also our work domestically, I'm starting to see some disturbing trends. And while it's not kind of, I don't lay everything at this problem, I'm starting to see that an influencer on this problem is this increasing cocktail of violence and sex that's being sold in the name of entertainment. And this increasing influence of the kind of stories that we tell on both the way men look at women, the way women look at men, and the way people look at children. And I'm starting to feel that maybe that's part of this whole equation here. And I'm starting to share that with people, and they're starting to challenge me, well, maybe you should do something about it. Do something about it? Well, I mean, what would I do? I have no background in that area or anything. I'm nobody from nowhere. I think I will hang that on the hook of things too difficult to do anything about except pray. And certainly prayer is really important. But God has not given us a spirit of fear and timidity. He's given us a spirit of power and love and self-discipline. Okay, God, but what does that mean in this case? I mean, I don't know anybody at the studios. I don't know anybody at the networks. You know, I don't know kind of what to do with this. And by the way, God, this thing that used to be way out here, this Crossroads thing, it's kind of come back here a little bit for me. And we've got some nice scale, we've got some momentum. It feels predictable. And then a friend called me, a good friend who was moving back to the U.S., who didn't know anything about this kind of stuff that I was wrestling with. And he said, hey, I wanted to let you know I'm leaving my company and I'm going to spend the rest of my life trying to make a difference in entertainment, and I'd like you to come with me. I Okay, one thing I know, I'm not going to a midweek service. I know at this point, staying away from that. And so went on kind of the journey again. Went on the journey again, which culminated with, in 2008, I left Crossroads to join some friends to try to make a difference in entertainment, to try to criticize by creating, to try to tell great stories that also call out what's best in us instead of preying on what's worst in us. And people said it was impossible. And you know what? It has been very, very hard. You know, we've made a lot of mistakes, but we've also started to make a difference. And so, you know, in these 8 years, I've produced 15 movies that have all made it onto primetime television on one of the networks. We've gotten content on primetime on NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox, multiple cable networks as well. And we've seen, you know, kind of this thing of being able to go back into a place that people told us was impossible. And, you know, I don't know what it is going to be for you this year. But one of the things I want to ask you to do is every weekend when you come in here and you get that program, open it up and look. It is chock full of prayer, Bible, and community. Just every weekend when you come here, open it up and look at it and say, God, would you draw my eyes to the step that I'm supposed to take this year? Maybe I'm supposed to join a community group. Maybe I'm just supposed to sit in my seat afterwards and ask for some prayer. Maybe I should subscribe to the daily. Maybe there's a go trip I need to go on and I need to physically go somewhere that makes me uncomfortable. You know, I thought for me that's three acts, right? I mean, any great story's got three acts. So, you know, I'm kind of done with this now. I said, as a matter of fact, God, I think 2016 should be the year of the chair. You know, as a matter of fact, God, I've kind of earned my merit badge in this risk thing. How about now you spiritually challenge me with the kind of dangerous levels of comfort and security that ruin most people? We'll see how I manage that. And then the brave journey. And during the brave journey, Nancy and I felt increasingly challenged. God was taking us back out here. Felt increasingly challenged that there was a decision that we needed to make. And so that's kind of all culminated to, you know, if you're sitting in here today and you feel like you're in the middle of risk and uncertainty, you're not alone. You know, I'm right there with you. We're kind of out there. And we've made a decision of something that we really feel like God's been preparing me to launch for quite some time. We made a decision. I'm not taking any income for the next 14 months. So we can kind of get this off the ground. We feel like God has pushed us kind of back out there, maybe farther than we've ever been. And I wish I could kind of share the details of it with you right now. It's not quite right time, but they did ask if I put this up. But so this is this information is also in your program if you want it. But if you want at some point when we are ready to reveal that in the next couple weeks, you want the inside scoop on it, you could text Brian to 38470, or just send me an email at brianwellsinfo@gmail.com. I'll just kind of fill you in on what we're doing. You know, the thing is, I don't like it out here. It's scary out here. But I found this is where God does some of his best work. And so 2016 for you, 2016 for you, I don't know what it is for you. Maybe there's a relationship that's gone south that you need to take a risk and pick up a phone. Maybe for you, there's something that you used to think you did for pleasure and you used to think you were choosing it and now you're starting to realize it's choosing you and you need to take a risk and ask for some help. Or maybe God's given you a dream. And he says, 2016, this is the year when you stop asking so much will it work and you start asking, should I try? My prayer for all of us is that you'd be a year where you find just a little crack in the fear. A little crack and you just kind of put your finger in and then you just step through. And on the other side, you don't find more fear and uncertainty. You find love and power and self-discipline. And you find an adventure that the world tells you is impossible. you stand? We're going to do this song right now. And this song is just this prayer to God, where we're saying two things to God. God, I want to hear your voice, and I want to do something about it.
If you lead me, Lord, I will follow. Will you lead me, Lord, I will go. Come and heal me, Lord, I will follow. Will you lead me, Lord, I will go. If you lead me, Lord, I will follow. Will you lead me, Lord, I will go. Come and heal me, Lord, I will follow. Will you lead me, Lord, I will go. I will go. You guys, thanks for singing. I bless you with power, love, and self-discipline. Get out of here, have an amazing week, and we'll see you next week at Super Bowl.